Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Westchester County, New York Executive George Latimer, a Democrat. Welcome, George Latimer. How are you?
I'm good, Alan, and Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you. Here we go again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, cycle starts all over.
Okay, so let's begin. Obviously, the death and devastation from the blizzard in Buffalo has gotten the attention of all New Yorkers, and we see community after community across the state sending people equipment and supplies to help dig out the region. Was Westchester County involved in this effort at all?
Yeah, we were. We sent up some equipment. We sent up somebody from our coroner's office. I've got a good relationship with Mark Polenkars, who's the county executive in Erie County. In fact, most of the county executives sort of talk to each other. It's the kind of professional sharing of information, sometimes misery, that we all go through. And Mark is a very experienced guy. He's three terms in up there. But we know that Buffalo has severe weather this time of the year. So when the call came out that they needed some help from outside, we were happy to contribute. Nassau County did a lot. I know that Albany County and Suffolk, we all chimed in what we could, given the situation. It is difficult in that Buffalo or Erie County is on the other end of the state from Westchester and Nassau. So it just take time for resources, big wheel trucks to get up there. But we all did what we could, and it seems the weather is now going to give them a helping hand.
And George Latimer, what is the rationale behind everybody helping everybody else? Is it just that people are good, or is it that this could be us?
Could be us. I think, first of all, most of us who are in government, and it doesn't matter whether you're conservative or progressive or whatever, most of us are in government because we want to do something that we consider good. Now, we might disagree on what good is, but the bottom line is most of us are not in with a malevolent outcome intended. So when somebody else is in a clear problem, something like this, a flooding issue, a COVID falls into the same category, things that are clearly beyond any one of our control, I think we're all prepared to put a shoulder to the wheel. And then the other element of it, Alan, you're absolutely right. It could happen to me. It might not be snow like this, but it could be something else. And I might have to turn to Dan McCoy in Albany or Adam Bello and Monroe and say, hey, guys, I don't have enough of this. Can you give me a helping hand? And so I think we do think in those terms.
So have you ever felt that somebody was not cooperative? And if so, this is one of those things we call honesty questions. And if so, yeah. Do you mumble and grumble, or is there a way to facilitate things?
Well, there's always mumbling and grumbling. I mean, let's just be honest. There are times when ideology does get in the way of a certain kind of an ask. And when that happens, then you mumble and grumble and you go on and find whatever resources you can. There were elements of the COVID circumstances that were objective and that everybody agreed we need to do this and that. But there are elements of the COVID issue that fell into the party division. Mm. Really, it was very true when Trump was president. And, it's like you are, you're not taking your party's position if you don't resist masks and you don't resist vaccinations and those kind of things. And there were a couple of times like that where the mumbles and grumbles happened. But then, you know, you may remember the former Governor Cuomo allowed local governments to make the decision on high-risk sports. That happened in February of 21. And all of a sudden, I get on the phone with Mark Molinaro, now congressman, then county executive, Pat Ryan, now congressman, then county executive. And we have a bipartisan conversation about whether we should do high-risk sports, and if so, how. So you overcome the barriers when the issue is high enough of importance, but there's always a certain amount of that that happens. It happens in every field of endeavor. I'm sure it's no different than, you know, in anything.
Meanwhile, in the New York Times, of all places, in Buffalo, finger-pointing and growing complaints over the storm response as the death toll grew, the Erie County executive criticized the Buffalo mayor, and the mayor suggested stress led to the outburst. So can the farmer and the cowboy be friends?
Well, yes. And I mean, in my county, I have Mike Spano, who is the mayor of Yonkers,
right,
third largest city, just behind Buffalo in size. And then I have three other cities, White Plains, New Rochelle, and Mount Vernon. All of those mayors, Sean Patterson Howard, Noam Bramson, Tom Roach, they're smart people. They run their cities. They have a sense of proprietary responsibility. So what I try to do when I work with them is work around the reality that it's their city, but our county has more resources, and we do. And I think in that regard, many times the localities turn to the county to come in with additional effort. And the interesting thing, I think, and you probably have observed this over the years, the smaller towns and the villages tend to rely on county government because they know they're small and they know their resources are limited. The bigger the city, the more they're like, well, you know, I'm a city, you know, I can do my own thing. But I've had a good relationship with the municipal officials in my county. There's conflict. I mean, you know, when we have conflict, we try to keep it between us,
mm-hmm,
and try not to get it out in the Buffalo News, because then, you know, emotions get high and then it's much harder to get the cooperation you need. At the end of the day, if you live in Yonkers, you live in Westchester. If you live in Mount Vernon, you live in Westchester. And Mount Vernon and Westchester and Yonkers and Westchester have to coordinate if we're going to solve a problem. So I think at the end of the day, the little tiffs go by the board and you ultimately get the job done.
Now, I've always wanted to ask you this. In terms of prestige, you know, you have all of these various cities. You have White Plains, where my Uncle Joe had the Gedney Way Pharmacy, and you have,
yeah,
you know, New Rochelle, where Aunt Dee Dee lived, next to the golf course. And, you know, these are pretty upscale places in some cases. How do you manage that, the economic disparities between those who have a lot and those who don't have so much?
Well, in some places, in some ways, the county steps in to try to provide that difference. So where you have a smaller, wealthier community and you have no problem with the homeless, the more urban community that has the problem with the homeless, the county comes in, develops the shelters that the municipal government may have difficulty in doing. We have stepped in. Mount Vernon is the community of my birth. I grew up there through high school. Mount Vernon is the least wealthy of the communities in Westchester County. It's predominantly African-American, and they have less of a tax base. So when Memorial Field is in a state of disrepair, the county steps in and helps them. We would not do that in Larchmont or Rye Brook or Bronxville because those communities don't need those resources. So we try to apply, you know, our regional resources where they're needed. But it isn't perfect. And as you can imagine, you know, there are people who view their communities with a certain status. Bronxville has a status worldwide. People know who Bronxville is, you know. You know, in your area of the state, Loudonville is a beautiful suburban enclave outside of Albany. It's not Arbor Hill. And, you know, everybody, you know, has their own sense of self. They're attracted to real estate if they have the resources in an area that's a better quality area. And so from a county standpoint, we're trying to worry more about how do we help the poor people or the middle class people where they exist. And, you know, those that are fortunate and successful, those villages and towns, you know, basically run themselves. They only need the county from time to time. Get a big flooding issue, then they call the county. Absent that, you know, they operate on their own, you know, their own agenda.
Well, George Latimer, the last time we talked, the midterm elections are less than a week away. Republicans did very well on Long Island and in the Congress, gaining seats. What do you make of the results in New York?
Well, let me tell you, first of all, as you know, and you've reported, Westchester County was an outlier. We were as blue as a suburban county. We won every single competitive race in Westchester County that was wholly within Westchester. We sent 7 assembly member seats back to Albany, 3 state senate seats, the one congressional district that was primarily in Westchester County. We won. We carried 7 judges in our judicial district. We're the biggest of the 5 counties in our judicial district. Our margin carried 7 Democratic judges in. We had the best results on the Environmental Bond Act of any county outside of New York City, and we actually did better than the Bronx, which is kind of amazing. So Westchester, I mean, we won every little unexpired council term and village election that was up this year. So Westchester has a different model. And when we looked at what happened a year ago in 21, when I was reelected by 62%, and in the same time, my good friend Laura Kern went down in Nassau and Todd Kominsky went down, we saw that in Westchester, we had pushed back against the Republican rhetoric. We have a Democratic base, that's true, but there's a Democratic majority in registration in Nassau, too, and in some of these other counties that want Republican. And we pushed back on the Republican narrative. We did not cede the tax argument, nor did we cede the crime argument. Crime is down in Westchester County. Taxes are down in Westchester County, county taxes. And we make that case aggressively. Having said that, the red tide that flowed flowed everywhere around us, and from a Democratic public official standpoint, that's serious. That is not good news. We had, for example, the Sean Patrick Maloney seat, which was about 40% Westchester, 40% Rockland, and 20% Putnam County. We delivered a 20,000 vote plurality for Sean Patrick Maloney out of the Westchester portion of the district, but he lost Putnam and Rockland by significant numbers. And Mike Lawler is now the congressman, and Mike is a solidly Republican congressman in an area that hasn't had one of those in a long, long time. So I think there has been some introspection in the Democratic world. What did we do? What didn't we do that we could have done? Mm. And I do think, as you pointed out many times in your reporting, there's a different world in the city. There's a different world in the suburbs, and there's a different world in the rural parts of upstate. In the suburbs, you're in a swing area. The Republicans can win, and the Democrats can win. And I think Democrats there not just get out the vote, which happens in the city. That's what you hear. Let's get out the Democratic base in Bronx and Brooklyn and to overcome the Republican numbers elsewhere. In the suburbs, you've got to win over independent voters. And we've done that in Westchester, and at the moment, that is not happening in Long Island. So there's a task ahead of us in the lower Hudson Valley and in Long Island. But it's not just Westchester. Look at Ulster County. Look at Columbia County. Those counties are moving in the direction that we're moving in. So I think it is doable, but it does take a lot of work.
And why are they moving in the direction you're moving? Is it because people move up from the big city and they bring their political affiliations with them?
Well, you have that as a factor. And I think, you know, frankly, that's one of the arguments that the Republicans like to make about Westchester County. Well, it's all these city people have moved up to Westchester. And that is true to some degree. Westchester's population has grown. We've attracted a lot of people who come from outside of the state. When they come in, they want to, you know this, they work in New York City or they work in Stamford, Connecticut, but they want to live in Westchester County. So we had a growth that got us over 1 million people for the first time ever in the census of 2020, 6% population growth. But we have also delivered the brand of Democratic result that I think is the prototype in the suburbs. We are fiscally conservative. We fight crime. But at the same time, we're progressive on matters of choice and environment and similar issues. That balance seems to be the suburban mindset to the greater extent. And it's not just in Westchester County. Look at Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. Look at Fairfax County, Virginia, in Northern Virginia. And I happen to live in those two counties earlier in my life. Summit County, Ohio, which is south east of Cleveland, another place I lived when I was in my corporate years. All of those counties were at one point Republican, and they're now have trended Democrat, where you have what I've just described, fiscal, you know, policies that keep taxes low or cut them, fight crime, don't give up the crime argument, don't accept the fact that you can accept a high level of crime. Oh, it's just the way it is. But by the same token, when you do those things and you address that suburban sensibilities, then you're in a position to do the other things like environmental protection and conversion of bus fleets from diesel to electric and things that also appeal to the suburban mindset. And I think, you know, when I look at the 22 election, there's been a lot of analysis about it. You've done some great analysis on it. You know, the fact that Long Island is lost at this point does not mean it's lost forever. But it does mean that there has to be a concerted effort to rebrand who the Democrats are. We have been branded through Fox News as the woke, you know, the woke party, which has radical ideas about everything under the sun. And you can't push back on that in an election cycle. You push back on that 12 months a year with everything you say and do. And I think we've been very strong in Westchester, in our government, in communicating with information along these lines.
So what role is played by New York City in influencing other elections?
Well, of course, they're the banyan tree that, you know, we live underneath, whether you're Westchester, Nassau, Suffolk, Bergen, Fairfield, what have you. This is where when I talk to Mark Poloncarz, you know, we sort of compare notes. His county and my county are almost equal in population. He's a shade, maybe 50,000 less people than we've got. But he is the dog in Western New York, the big dog. We are, you know, influenced every night by New York City TV. And on New York City TV, something bad happens in Brooklyn or the Bronx. And that becomes the chitter chatter over coffee in White Plains the next day and in Mineola and in Riverhead and in the other suburban communities. So it is harder for us to shape the messaging in the suburbs because we are dominated by the city realities. And the city is a huge city. It's 8-9 million people. Mm. There's all kinds of things that happen in the city on any given day, good things and bad things. But for example, you know, there's a lot of conversation about what's going to happen in coming back, the economics coming back of Midtown Manhattan. I've got to tell you, Westchester County has bounced back from the COVID crisis. We have real estate growth and revenue and sales tax that's been really terrific. So our message in 1 million people in a metro area of 16 million people seems like an outlier message, but we have to try to work through what media outlets we have. Now, as you know, the local newspapers are not as strong as they used to be. Newsday is still pretty strong on the island, but, you know, the Gannett system, the Journal News is not what it was, you know, 30 years ago. So you can't use the daily newspaper the same way. We have local cable television. You've got, your cable systems in the Albany area that cover certain things. Ours is a tool. Then we have a lot of weekly newspapers, and we have to use weekly newspapers to get messages out. And then we have to do things that put us out in retail politics in front of people. And as you know, retail politics has seemed to come into a bad fashion these days. Most of the time, candidates for office don't grip and grin, don't go out there and campaign personally. They campaign through, a media appearance of some sort or a speech before a group. And I still worship at the altar of retail campaigning, Alan. That's how I started 35 years ago when I ran for the local city council in my community and won, Democrat and Republican community. You go out and meet people and you start to reframe who you are and what you stand for. And it's worked for us, and I think it can work elsewhere.
We are talking to Westchester County Executive George Latimer, a Democrat. So why did Blue State New York elect so many Republicans, and why did Lee Zeldin come so close to Kathy Hochul in the governor's race? For example, when you look at the map of New York State, almost all of upstate is red while downstate is blue.
Well, first off, the redistricting debacle was pretty clearly a problem. Had the lines been drawn differently, you would not have had four seats lost. The Republicans would have gained a seat, maybe two, under sort of normal lines. But, you know, the argument starts with, you know, did the Democrats in the legislature overreach with the first legislative plan? And the answer would probably be yes, they overreached. Now, you could argue that the Texas Republicans and the Florida Republicans overreached as well, and they threw Democratic incumbent congressmen out the window. So the tendency is in a Democratic state, let's us overreach in order to offset what the other states are doing. But regardless of that, so it goes to court. The Republicans cleverly go to a judge in Steuben County. You and I know where Steuben County is. I will guarantee you if I go to the diner this morning, most of the people in my diner will not know where Steuben County is. And a judge out in Steuben County, a surrogate court, judge acting as a Supreme Court, rules the lines are out of whack. Okay, let's assume that's a reasonable decision. Then at that point, it doesn't go back to the state legislature to redo the lines in a better way with a stern admonition. It let the, you know, they let that judge adjudicate and hire a, you know, a cartographer out of Pittsburgh, California, to come up with lines. Hey, Alan, when do you put the Upper West Side and the Upper East Side in the same congressional district? That's what a Pittsburgh guy does, not a New York guy does. A New York guy knows that the Upper West Side and the Upper East Side are two different areas, and the districts run north-south in Manhattan, not east-west, and he did it anyway. He almost had Yvette Clark and Hakeem Jeffries in the same district in Brooklyn. That got fixed like the last night before the lines came out. So it tells me that the mistake of the way the lines were redistricted was a disaster, and there are people to blame for it. I don't exactly want to finger people that I can't prove anything, but I know what I feel, and I feel that it was a brilliant job by the Republicans to jujitsu the Democrats, and we let them do it, or we didn't fight back effectively to stop it. You get the lines we get now, and then all of a sudden we lose. So we have trouble on Long Island. We lose all the Long Island seats. We have some trouble in the Hudson Valley, and we lose two of the three in-play seats. And there you go.
All I know is that my mother told me, and I'm old now, but my mother told me, never go on the east side. There are different people over there. Okay, so...
Looks good on a map. As far as the statewide situation is concerned,
yes.
Look, I think the Republicans did a very good job of making crime a number one issue of debate. And truthfully, you know, they tied it to the bail laws. And I could certainly argue that the bail laws, as they were created, require some significant change. There was some change made to it. I think more change is needed. But they made the bail laws equal the rise in crime, which is not the case. And the Democrats, in general, did not have a good pushback on it. I think Lee Zeldin played that tune on his fiddle very effectively. and he did very, very well in a lot of places. I did tell you that we pushed back on crime starting in January of this year, because we could see, you know, we may be a county level government, but we're not dumb people. We could see that this was going to be a theme of the Republicans. And I wanted, even though I'm a county official, I wanted to send Democrats to the state legislature to represent us. I was an assemblyman and a senator in that delegation. And I know that the Democrats are going to run those two houses. And I don't want to send Republicans there who are just going to carp on the sidelines and criticize. I want somebody in there who has influence, who will be able to shape policy. So we felt it was important to push back on crime, but we in general did not push back on crime properly. And you have places in this state where there's no crime problem, but the people believe that crime is running rampant.
Absolutely.
Because it was positioned that way.
So let me interrupt and ask you this. Speaking of the Republicans in Congress, what do you make of New York Republican Congressman George Santos admitting that he lied about his job experience and college education during his successful campaign for a seat in the United States House of Representatives?
It's terrible. He should resign. It's simple as that. And I understand I'm a Democrat saying that about a Republican. And so people say, whoa, it's a Democrat. You just want to win the House. That, that, that. But Santos didn't just lie about one thing. If he had said, I went to Baruch and he didn't go to college, you know, okay, you lied about your college group. He lied about everything, everything. He lied about his parentage. He claimed ethnicity to connect with Jewish folks when he's not Jewish. You don't do that. And then here's the thing that I want to highlight before somebody says, well, Latimer's just a Democrat, wants to see a Republican go. Who was it that called upon Hevesy, Spitzer, Schneiderman, Cuomo, Benjamin to resign? Wasn't it primarily Democrats that came out and said, this is enough, we can't take this? We police our own. When our people have crossed the line, there's a big debate, oh, Cuomo was run out on a rail, and this guy, Benjamin's been exonerated and all that. But at the time that the scandals broke, Democrats spoke out against a Democrat that was scandal-ridden. The Republicans, and I think they're starting to see that now in Nassau. I have seen Blakeman say something about Santos, and I think Joe Caro, too. But it's incumbent upon the Republican Party to do the same thing. When you have somebody who is a fraud, and that's what George Santos says, he's a fraud. He presented himself to the people as one thing, and he's not that at all. Now, he won because people want a Republican congressman. They're angry. So there'll be a special election. And if the people still want a Republican congressman, then they'll elect a Republican congressman. But don't send our own version of Marjorie Taylor Greene to the House of Representatives, not even for one term. You know, nobody disputes the fact that Mike Lawler legitimately won his congressional seat. Nobody disputes the fact that Mark Molinaro legitimately won his congressional seat. You can like their politics. They're in the other party. It doesn't matter. But George Santos is a fraud, and he should resign.
Well, can you give us an update on this triple health threat in Westchester County?
Well, we've had a rough go of it, to be sure. COVID is not the third part of this, which is the one thing we've been tracking for the last 3 years. COVID is not as rampant today as it was a year ago. You may remember a year ago, the Omicron variant hit. And that was a hugely infectious thing. That's when I got my case of COVID. And at one point, we had about 36,000 active cases of COVID in a county of 1 million people. Right now, we're running about 3,000 active cases of COVID, a little higher than it was in the fall and the summer, but not overwhelmingly. So the COVID situation appears to be something we're going to live with. We're going to have it at some level, and we're going to have to deal with it and be intelligent and get our shots and our boosters, blah, blah, blah. That being said, the presence of COVID at the same time that we've had a more aggressive flu season and then the RSV thing, which is also, you know, very problematic. A lot of us have walked around with respiratory issues that were not COVID, coughing and breath and so forth. It has hit us. It hasn't debilitated us, and our hospitals have not been overflowing. And that's really the biggest issue here, Alan, is can your hospital system support the amount of illness you have? We have in Westchester County 11 hospitals, 2,700 beds. And then, of course, we're right next door in places like Greenwich Hospital, Danbury Hospital, where some Westchester people go, and people from Rockland come into the Westchester hospitals. So in our region, we've been able to provide the health care necessary for people to get through this. And we have not had an unusually high amount of fatalities because of this. So I would say, in general, we're managing it well. That we isn't George Latimer, county executive. That is the medical health system of Westchester.
We've seen a rise in anti-Semitism and racist acts in general. So what are you encountering in Westchester County?
There's been more incidents. Certainly there's been more anti-Semitism. I'm not Jewish. I'm Roman Catholic, but I'm offended when I see anti-Semitic acts, and there have been an increase of them. We've passed an executive order to sort of define what anti-Semitism is, and we place that alongside our efforts on racism, anti-Asian hatred, anti-Hispanic hatred on the same platform, that people have to be judged by the content of their character, not by their demographics. And I think in Westchester in general, we have a pretty harmonious, diverse population, but we do have those outliers that are incented by what they read or hear on the internet who have expressed hatred. We haven't seen it manifest in many violent acts, but the other acts are pretty heinous. And we are working through our Human Rights Commission to try to improve education and push back on it.
We're out of time. Our guest, and that's too bad because I love talking to George Latimer. We're out of time. Our guest has been Westchester County Executive George Latimer. George, as always, thanks for joining us. We look forward to the next time we talk to you.
Al, it's always a pleasure. I enjoyed it, and I wish you a very happy and a successful new year.
You too. Here it comes.
Here it comes.